This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we start today in Boston, where there has been a spate of violence against boys and young men, including the shooting of a 14-year-old boy in Roxbury earlier this month. Now, when we talk about community violence here on the show, we try to keep it rooted in the lived experience of the families most affected by it. And today, we are talking to an organization that works with some of those families. Youth Connect is a program of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Boston. They place clinical social workers in police station houses, and when a child comes in through the station, they can reach out to the kid, to the family, and offer help. It's an attempt to catch kids and maybe their siblings and other family members early and support them for success. With us today are Youth Connect Executive Director Kevin Barton and clinical social worker Stephanie Garzavela, who is embedded at the District A7 station house in East Boston. Kevin, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much, Tiziana.
Great to have you. And Stephanie, welcome to you too.
Thank you so much.
So Kevin, kind of in a nutshell, tell us how this works.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, you know, Youth Connect is a violence prevention, intervention, and advocacy program of Boys and Girls Clubs of Boston in partnership with the Boston Police. You know, our philosophy and mission at the Boys and Girls Clubs of Boston is that, you know, for the past 130 years, it's really been meant to serve the whole child and all children. And so Youth Connect is a part of that continuum of services and supports to youth and families who have been, honestly, I think, most marginalized across the city of Boston. We started, actually, Youth Connect over 26 years ago, and we do place clinical social workers in stations all throughout Boston to really work with young people between the ages of about 10 to 24, along with their families that are all referred by officers.
So, Kevin, this 10 to 24 is part of the reason that we wanted to talk to you. And, Stephanie, I'm gonna get to you about what that experience is like in the station house in a minute, but... Mm-hmm. I saw an article earlier this month in Commonwealth Magazine, Kevin, talking about concern that our interventions with young people, with teenagers, adolescents, need to start younger and younger.
Yeah.
And it's striking that with Youth Connect, as I understand it, when you reach out to a family, if there are siblings, if there are young, now gives you an opportunity to start engage with the whole family and maybe head further challenges and give further supports before things get bad.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Tiziana, last year we served 537 young people, but that also included their 1,400 family members. So to your point, there's siblings, there's cousins, whomever is really living with this young person, because we know that a young person really grows up in the context of family, they grow up in the context of schools and neighborhoods, and we best serve young people when we see them in that context. So we do have to start young, and we are seeing younger, obviously, younger and younger young people interfacing with the police. So we know we need to do a lot of that preventative work as well as the intervention.
So we're speaking with Kevin Barton and Stephanie Garzavela of Youth Connect, which places clinical social workers in police station houses. So, Stephanie, I'll turn to you first. So as I understand it, there's mental health clinical work. You might do service connection. You might help families who have basic needs, maybe housing insecurity, food insecurity. You might connect them to other organizations. Is that right?
Correct. Okay. Yes.
So can you, without violating confidentiality, can you give us an example of a kid that you worked with recently and sort of how that context started and then what you did?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I recently started working with a family and a young person who we'd actually been previously connected to through Youth Connect. This time the referral came in after this young man was arrested following an incident in the community, and it quickly became pretty clear that the family did have a lot of needs. So a lot of my work so far has been based on exactly what you're saying, those basic needs, resources, making sure the family has what they need day to day, because we know the impact that that has on a young person's behavior and the way that they're presenting at school in the community. So I was able to work with this young man, figure out what he was interested in. We got him a summer job, which is now snowballing into school year employment. He's reconnected with school, and his court case was closed because of all of the work that he did so far. So that was really rewarding.
And that's kind of the metric of success, Kevin?
Yeah. You know, when we think about success here at Youth Connect, we celebrate sometimes those small wins as well. Right. For some of our young people, it might quite simply be allowing themselves to engage in the actual relationship with the social worker.
Trusting somebody.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because we know that, you know, that trust and caring relationship, there is so much power in that.
So, Stephanie, I'll come back to you for a minute. When you started working with this young man, you'd been connected before, mm-hmm. but he had an arrest. So how does that work in the station house? Does a police officer say, hey, heads up, we've had an arrest of a kid. Do you want to connect? I mean, talk us through how that day works.
Yeah, it often does look something like that. I think I have the fortune of being in a station where the officers really recognize the benefit that having a Youth Connect social worker brings. So oftentimes, it will be the arresting officer or someone that was in the station will come find me, let me know, hey, this young person had this incident. We'd love for you to connect with them. Sometimes I'm able, if the young person is in the station, to actually go meet them there. And if not, officers typically will give families a heads up sometimes if they're referring someone to me, and I'll give them a call and just kind of get connected that way. But they can come from really anyone in the station who's seeing this young person.
So a few years ago, Youth Connect produced a video, and we pulled a little sound from it because you were speaking in it with Derek Russo, who's a Boston police officer in District 7, talking about this relationship.
Stephanie is an added resource. She's able to help troubled teens, unlike patrol offices, which really can't provide that.
Is it the case, Kevin, that most station houses and the officers in them greet a Youth Connect social worker as a resource and are pretty warm about the whole thing?
Oh, absolutely, Tiziana. You know, we can't do what we do without the Boston Police Department welcoming us into their stations. It is so clear that there is such a win-win here with for both our social workers, the families, the officers, really being able to really address those underlying issues that come up for young people. We're in this unique position, right, being there with the officers day to day, side by side, really talking about the issues that are going on out there, and then allowing officers to really make these referrals to us.
And what kinds of referrals come in, Stephanie? So I'm not being voyeuristic. I want people to understand what we're talking about, right? So ages, ranges of types of reasons for arrests, needs of families. Mm-hmm. Give us a sense of that landscape.
Absolutely. So typically I will tell officers in my station, if there's a young person you're worried about, I want to hear about them. But typically some of the examples that I see are a lot of issues at home in the community, things like truancy, behaviors that are getting in the way at school. Often kids have been arrested. I think officers are really looking to other options in those cases. I have also received referrals for young people involved in community violence on both ends of that spectrum, which can, you know, create a lot of opportunities either way.
When you say both ends of that mm-hmm. spectrum, do you mean as both a victim or maybe somebody who enacts violence?
Yes, exactly. Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
So why do you do it? And is it as hard as it sounds?
It's hard. I think I do it because of those small wins that Kevin was talking about. I think it's wonderful when you get to see those tangible results, like a kid graduating high school or getting a job. But for me, it's really that relationship that matters the most, having a parent pick up the phone and call me when things are getting rough and knowing that I'm going to be there to listen and support them, that I'm there to stand in their corner to help them advocate for their own needs. I think that's what keeps me going.
And parents do that. They call you. They say, hey, you know, so-and-so.
Yeah.
Things are getting a little tough at home.
Yeah.
He's acting out. I need help.
They do. They do. And they do it if it relates to the specific young person that I'm working with or if it's something that is affecting their entire family. I think our families very quickly figure out we are there for their entire family unit. So they take advantage of that.
Kevin, what are a couple of the little wins that you've seen recently that really took you?
Sure. excuse me. So, you know, every day, I think our team of social workers are out there. They are doing incredible work. And there are definitely stories that stick with me. So, you know, when you think over the summertime that there were over 20 referrals for firearms to Youth Connect, there were young people who were getting hurt. When I hear about the efforts that our social workers are able to do with other providers in the community in Boston, being able to really make sure that a young person ends up, you know, being able to honestly move where they live, mm-hmm. right? Because maybe perhaps it is not the safest spot for them. You know, when we can really work with other providers to ensure that a young person is going to be safe, that is a huge win for us, right? And I know that we have been able to, as a program, work with other providers to relocate some young people who need to be relocated. Or getting a young person a job who, you know, I remember one story about a young man who, you know, there were some Corey issues where maybe it might be a little tougher to get a job. But through some partnerships that we've had, we were able to help him get a job. You know, those are the wins that we're talking about.
So Corey being a criminal background, right, that gets in the way when an employer takes a look to see if that paperwork is out there.
Exactly.
And what are a couple of the other organizations you work with?
So we are really, honestly, we are a resource-rich city. And, you know, there are still inequities when it comes to accessing those, but we can't do what we do without our violence prevention partners. So for us, it might be actually working with our violence prevention partners at BMC.
You know, Boston Medical Center.
Yeah. Maybe it is at Brigham Women's MGH, or maybe it's Children's Hospital. But we're also partnering with a lot of systems. We have, you know, Boston Public Schools. We have Department of Children and Families, Department of Youth Services, or DYS, Department of Mental Health, you know, and then other nonprofits that are out there as well in, you know, in the struggle with us, because it really does take that concerted effort where we're all coming together to really meet the needs of families.
So you have in your sort of materials, Stephanie, this business case that says that essentially the cost of incarceration, right, or I always think of it in terms of prevention versus detention, right? Mm-hmm. So the cost of confining one youth for a year in Massachusetts is the phrase Youth Connects works, more than $193,000. Mm-hmm. And then you guys go on to say the average annual cost, including benefits, of a Youth Connect social worker who serves 80 clients and families is $80,000, mm-hmm, right? So almost 2.5 times as much for confinement of some kind versus a clinical social worker who can work with 80 young people. Yes. Why are we not doing this everywhere? Seriously, if that's the business case that you can consistently present, mm-hmm, what's the holdup?
I wish I knew the answer to that. I think we have been very fortunate that Boston has been a bit at the forefront of this issue. I think when more advocacy was happening around this over the last 2 years, we were kind of looking around going, we've been doing this. And I think at least here, the Boston Police Department has been very receptive to that. And I think we've been able to kind of make alliances across the government as well, different levels of partnership that have really made this work for our city. And I do hope to see this model spread because I think it works.
We're speaking with Stephanie Garza-Vela and Kevin Barton, who are with Youth Connect. It's a program of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Boston that places clinical social workers in station houses to do early intervention with young people who come through and their families. So, Kevin, I'll turn back here now. Okay, so a little more than 2 years ago now, we start to see the protests associated with the murder of George Floyd. We begin to see the defund the police movement. And as that movement gets bandied about and there's serious conversation about it, one of the things that emerges is the limitations of police forces in handling mental health crises and providing, really intervening where mental health is at the middle, or trauma, et cetera. Mm-hmm. This looks like a model that says, right, so this allows the police to turn over the social work aspect to a partner who has built trust inside the station house.
Absolutely.
And can kind of take that piece over. So does police funding help fund this? How does that part work?
Yeah, so, you know, I think, let me also just say, Tiziana, that to Stephanie's point, I think Boston has been a leader on this front in thinking about having social workers in police stations and other co-responders as well. In terms of the funding, you know, we are fortunate that we receive funding from many sources, which would include, you know, city and state, as well as individual donors who are just very much invested in, you know, foundations. So we are fortunate. Now, the truth is, you know, more investment will need to continue, right? Because to your point, this is a model that works, and it does require, you know, significant investment.
All right. So I want to bring another story forward. And I think one of the questions that I have for you, Stephanie, is we've been talking about boys. Are you seeing an increase in interventions with girls?
I, on my own caseload, I have gotten more girls, I think, over the last few months. Oftentimes different referring factors, but yes.
What does that mean?
So a lot of the girls that end up referred to me have different risk factors. So some of them are spending a lot of time outside the home, so we're concerned about things like exploitation, trafficking. Some of them do have involvement with the criminal justice system as well, sometimes of their own accord, sometimes based on their connections with other folks in the community. So sometimes the work looks a little bit different, but I love getting to work with both boys and girls because I think that they both utilize and interpret the support a little bit differently.
And how do you, I understand that cooperation is not the, accepting your help mm-hmm. is voluntary.
It is.
So what do you have to do to build trust with a young person, a kid, or their family to get them to say yes?
I think each case is a little bit different. I think we often are coming into contact with young people and with families that have been burned by different providers, different systems, and so that initial trust isn't as forthcoming. But I think one of the big things that we pride ourselves on is kind of sticking to our word. So when we have that initial call with a family, if we've set out goals, we want them to see within the next week or so, there has been progress. We are supporting them in the way that we're saying, and just kind of continue showing up in that way that they understand we mean it, we are there, we are going to be a reliable source of support. And I think with young people, I think that they really respond well to that genuine connection. So I go in just wanting to be myself, be very transparent about what I see, the things that I'm concerned about, and really put them in the driver's seat. You know, what do you want to use our time for? How do you want us to work together?
And how many families would you say you're working with right now?
Right now, I'm looking at about 25 families.
Okay. Does that feel like a lot?
It depends on the day. I think when I'm balancing all of my responsibilities, it can feel like a lot, but I've definitely had more in my time at Youth Connect and I've had less, so okay. We figure it out as we go.
And Kevin, how many station houses is Youth Connect in right now?
Yeah, so, you know, we have presence in 6 neighborhood districts and then 3 citywide mm-hmm. units. You know, and then over the years, we've been able to increase, decrease. As funding allows.
How many more would you like to be in the next year?
Oh, great question. We're always looking to have greater impact, Tiziana. So I would love to see us in more stations. We have heard from BPD before that it would be great to have us in all of their stations. So it's going to take a real concerted effort and an investment.
Is that mostly money holding it up?
Absolutely.
All right. Kevin Barton is Executive Director of Youth Connect. Stephanie Garza-Vela is a clinical social worker. Youth Connect's a program of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Boston, which places clinical social workers in station houses. Great to learn about the work. Thank you so much to both of you.
Thank you for having us.